Everybody could fly except Baby Hawk. He was the itty bitty guy. But Baby Hawk wanted to fly like the rest of his family.
Once again, you have no money.
We love stories!
It's time for the Appleseed, filled with stories for you and your family, all kinds of tales from all kinds of tellers, stories to lift your heart and warm your spirit and to give flight to your imagination. There's a little of all of that today on the Appleseed. I'm Sam Payne, your host. It's such a pleasure for me to be with you every time that you tune in and bring these stories into your home and into your heart. Now, on today's episode, what's the hardest thing you've ever learned how to do? Maybe you've become a master at the piano. Maybe you can juggle. Maybe you're great at gymnastics or video games. But here's the question, how long did it take for you to learn to do the thing you're so good at? Probably more than an hour, more than a day, more than a week, probably years of practice to become really good at the things you're best at. Lots of things in life are like that, right? Going through school, for example, starts when we're very young, doesn't end for some time, many years, and some people continue going to school even longer, sometimes years longer. Whatever it is we try to learn, if we want to be really good, we should realize it's going to take a while. Of course, if we stick with it, it's worth it. Today, we have some stories about patience and persistence from tellers like Bobby Norfolk, Michael Katz, and more. We're going to talk with Cole Wissinger, our friend, about a film he loves, maybe you do too, The Emperor's New Groove. And we're going to hear a lot more. We're going to hear a tune from Mustard's Retreat. But to introduce us to the first story that we're going to hear this hour, I'm pleased to be joined in the studio by Trent Horton, one of our assistant producers. Trent, it's great to have you with me.
Hey, Sam, how's it going?
It's going all right, and we're going to hear a great story from Bobby Norfolk here, a real classic. Tell us about what we're going to hear.
So it's called Baby Hawk Learns to Fly, and to introduce it, I don't know if you've ever like seen someone do something and just thought, wow, that is amazing that they could do that. I used to always see people like do backflips on the ground or something. I was like, dang, that's super cool. And as I was thinking about that, I think one of the hardest things to like learning to do stuff like that is patience.
Yeah.
Because we live with so many instantaneous things nowadays. You look something up on Google, immediately you know. You don't have to go to the library anymore to find information or anything.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, when you're learning something or when you have to like wait for something to happen, it takes a long time and it's really kind of tough to get used to that. And so I remember when I was younger, my dad could ride a unicycle.
Oh, wow.
And so I always thought, wow, that's really cool. I wish I could do that. And so I took his unicycle, and I gave it a shot, and it was just a no-go for me. And so I kind of just gave up at that point because I was like, well, if it didn't work the first time, I obviously don't have the knack. But a few years later, we were on vacation from school, and me and my younger brother both were like, you know, we're going to learn how to do this. We can do it. And so we spent like a month, even after the break was over, we would go outside and we'd prop ourselves up between the garbage can and the mailbox, lean forward, try to take off and just fall over. And we, you know, crashed so many times. But after a month or more maybe of trying, finally we were able to get it. And it took so long, but like once we got to that point, it was just the most satisfying moment. And that's kind of how I feel like this story is. This baby hawk trying to learn how to fly, and he asks everybody how to do it, and he just can't quite figure it out.
You are let in this story to great comic effect, right,
mm-hmm.
into the mind of a little bird learning
exactly,
how to
yeah.
fly. And I think it's amazing. It's always amazing. I love hearing you talk about learning to ride the unicycle. It's always amazing to me what memories get brought up when you listen to a story like this.
Yeah.
Right? And it's different for every person. As you're listening, you'll hear, as you get acquainted with the little adventure of the bird in this story, you'll think, gosh, what's the hardest thing I've learned how to do? Or a hard thing that you've learned how to do may come to your mind. I am always amazed. I just don't get it, how a creature could leave the nest and find itself flying, you know?
I mean, it'd be terrifying.
It's just a moment in nature that I just have no frame of reference for, right? Except this story, Bobby Norfolk and Baby Hawk learns to fly. You're going to love it. Here it is on the Appleseed.
How Baby Hawk Learned to Fly. Now, Baby Hawk was an itty-bitty guy, no bigger than a minute. And he had never flown a day in his life. As a matter of fact, he thought he was a penguin. He walked everywhere. His mommy could fly, his daddy could fly, he had two big brothers, they could fly, big sister could fly, grandma and papa could fly, I still got it. Everybody could fly except Baby Hawk. He was an itty-bitty guy. But Baby Hawk wanted to fly like the rest of his family. But there were some things that Baby Hawk had to learn before he could fly. And this is how Baby Hawk learned to fly. Oh, Baby Hawk, one day he looked up in the sky and his whole family was flying through the air. Shyow, nyow, 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 nyow. Oh, man, look at them. His two big brothers would be flying way up in the upper atmosphere and they would spot a small bird flying below their prey. They would stop in midair, turn their beak toward the ground, toward their prey, use their powerful vision. Boom, boom, boom. Lock in their sights. System locked. Take a 230-mile-an-hour power dive straight toward the bird. They take their talons and they'll grab that bird, pow, and take off with it. Wow! How did he do that? His mom and dad will be flying in the upper atmosphere near the cloud line, too. They would spot a salmon or a trout hopping up in a shallow lake. They would stop in mid-air. Lower their beak toward the water. Use their powerful vision. Boom. 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 Lock in their sights. System locked. 230-mile-an-hour power dive straight toward that lake. They take their talons and grab the fish and keep going. Pow! Splash! Wow! How did they do that? Oh, man. I wish I could fly. I'm gonna try. So Baby Hawk started to practice. He started flapping his wings, flapping his wings, flapping his wings, and flapping his wings, flapping his wings, flapping his wings, flapping his wings, and flapping his wings. I'm still on the ground. I'm not flying. Hey, I'm gonna ask my oldest brother to teach me how to fly. He can fly real good. So in found his oldest brother. Oldest brother?
Yeah, what's up, little dude?
Will you teach me how to fly?
Little baby boy, you want to know how to fly? Okay, baby boy, I will teach you how to fly. But you have to learn something first.
What do you have to learn first?
You have to learn to have a purpose.
Purpose? What's that?
Look, little boy, you can't just jump up in the sky and start flying like us. You have to have a purpose in life to know why you want to fly.
Oh.
So time come and time go. Baby Hawk learned about having a purpose.
Why do I want to?
'Cause I'm a hawk.
Duh.
Time to practice. He started flapping his wings, flapping his wings, flapping his wings, and flapping his wings, flapping his wings, flapping his wings, flapping his wings, and flapping his wings.
I'm still on the ground. I'm not flying. He tricked me. I'm going to ask my second big brother to teach me how to fly. So he went and found his second big brother.
Second big brother?
Yeah, what's up, little dude?
Will you teach me how to fly?
And a baby boy want to know how to fly. Tired of being a penguin, huh, dude? Okay. I will teach you how to fly, but you have to learn something first.
What do I have to learn now?
You have to learn to have patience.
Patience? But that's what a doctor has. Not doctor's patience, boy.
The other definition.
Chill out.
Slow down. Take your time. Take your time. Have patience, Baby Hawk. You will fly. So, time come and time go. Baby Hawk learned about patience. That's long enough. Time to practice. He started a-flapping his wings, flapping his wings, flapping his wings, and a-flapping his wings, flapping his wings, flapping his wings, flapping his wings, and a-flapping his wings.
I'm still on the ground. I'm not flying. He tricked me too. I'm gonna ask my big sister to teach me how to fly. She knows everything. That's my big sister. They don't know what they're talking about, oh knuckleheads. So he went and found his big sister. He was kind of afraid of her. He pulled on her feathers. Big sister, hey, hey, what, hey, boy? Hey, hey, peace, peace. I'm not coming to start anything with you, girl. What do you want, boy, pulling on my feathers like that? Make it short and make it quick.
Make it short, make it quick. What?
Nothing.
Will you teach me how to fly?
Little baby boy wouldn't know how to fly. Okay, baby boy, I would teach you how to fly, but you have to learn something first. This learning can be a drag.
What do you have to learn now?
You have to learn to have confidence. Confidence? What's confidence? Don't play with me, boy.
I don't know what it is.
Be like the little engine. Remember him? I know I can. I think I can. I know I can. I think I can. Have confidence in your brain and courage in your heart, baby hawk. You will fly. So, time come and time go. Baby hawk learned about having confidence in his brain and courage in his heart. He was walking around. Mm-hmm, that's right. I'm bad. You know I'm bad. You know I'm bad. There's nothing to it but to do it. Time to practice. He started a-flapping his wings, flapping his wings, flapping his wings, and a-flapping his wings, flapping his wings, flapping his wings, flapping his wings, and a-flapping his wings.
I'm still on the ground. She tricked me too. Oh,
Baby Hawk got so upset he sat down in the grass and started to cry.
I don't want to cry. I want to fly. It's a conspiracy. A conspiracy. A left wing or a right wing conspiracy.
Well, as Baby Hawk was sitting in the grass crying, the wind changed where he was sitting. Baby Hawk looked around. The grass started to rustle back and forth in the breeze. And then Baby Hawk saw a shadow move over the grass where he was sitting. Baby Hawk looked at the shadow move across the grass, and all of a sudden, he was picked up in the air. It was Daddy Hawk. Solid wings, fast action. Daddy Hawk had flown overhead and grabbed Baby Hawk in his huge talons and carried him into the air. Whoosh, whoosh, whoosh. Baby Hawk said,
where we going, Daddy?
We're going for a ride, son. This is a very special day.
And Daddy Hawk took Baby Hawk way onto the top of a mountain peak and dropped him off. Boop. Then Daddy Hawk flew away to another mountain peak. Plop, plop, plop. And landed to where his mama was waiting, his two big brothers, his big sister, grandma, and pawpaw. Daddy landed. Chick-a-boom.
All right, Baby Hawk. Today, you learn how to fly. I want you to fly from over there on that mountain peak and come over here to where we are.
Baby Hawk said, all right, Daddy, here I come.
Baby Hawk looked at the ground.
Daddy! You sure you want me to do this?
Yes, yeah, son, you can do it. Come on over, waiting for you.
All right, Daddy, here I come.
He looked back down.
Daddy?
What?
What's that down there on the ground? It looks like broccoli.
That's not broccoli, son. Those are oak trees. Come on, boy, I've been waiting for you, wasting my time.
Yes, sir.
So Baby Hawk took a running start. He knew how to run. He got to the cliff wall. He jumped off the mountain. He started a-flapping his wings, flapping his wings, flapping his wings, and a-flapping his wings, flapping his wings, flapping his wings, flapping his wings, and a-flapping his wings.
And he flew
for a minute.
Then a force called gravity pulled him to the ground. Snatch! Wah!
Help me, everybody, I'm falling, help me, help me.
Oh no, big brother and big sister said, our little brother's falling, let's go get him. Daddy said, no, stand down, back up, Don't go get him. He will learn on his own. Tough love. Then Daddy yelled down, Baby Hawk, remember, purpose, patience, confidence, courage. Purpose, patience, confidence, courage. Purpose, patience, confidence, courage. Purpose, patience, confidence, courage. Purpose, patience, confidence. Courage. The next thing Baby Hawk knew, a change had taken place within himself. And every time he lifted his wings up and down, the currents of air would take him higher. Choo, 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 choo. He was a little engine boy. He did loop-de-loop, yum, yum, yum. He did a power dive. He leveled off and rolled the currents of air. Whoosh, whoosh, whoosh. Mommy Hawk looked down. That's my baby boy. And when Baby Hawk landed to where his family was, chicka-boom. Woo, oh man, wow, what a rush. That was better than bungee jumping. Thank you, Mommy. Thank you, Daddy. Thanks, brothers. Thanks, sis. Thanks, Grandma and Papa, about teaching me about purpose, patience, confidence, and courage. Because without that, life itself would be just impossible. And that's how Baby Hawk learned to fly.
Baby Hawk Learns to Fly, a story told for you by Bobby Norfolk. You know, Trent, there you never hear a more energetic storytelling performance.
No, you don't.
Than a story told for you by Bobby Norfolk, right?
I was just, as we were listening to it, I was thinking about how much I love his energy.
Yeah. Yeah, he's such a dynamo. And there are life lessons in that story. I'm thinking about, you know, I always remember the two P's and the two C's, right? Purpose, patience, courage, mm-hmm. and confidence. And in this story, Baby Hawk learns that from all of the members of Baby Hawk's family,
yeah.
right? Yeah, it's kind of a family tale.
It is.
Well, Trent, thanks for bringing it to us today.
Yeah, thanks for letting me be here.
There's a whole lot more coming up on The Appleseed. I'm Sam Payne.
You're listening to The Appleseed. We'll be back in a moment. Welcome back to The Appleseed. Here's Sam Payne.
It's so wonderful to be with you today, bringing you these stories in this hour of The Appleseed. If you're just joining us, we heard a moment ago, Baby Hawk Learns to Fly, a dynamic performance from Bobby Norfolk. To hear more of Bobby's great work, you can find him online at bobbynorfolk.com. He's been telling stories of all kinds before audiences of all kinds for decades and decades. We're going to hear from Beatrice Bowles coming up in just a little bit. We'll hear from Michael Katz, too, and even a little tune from Mustard's Retreat. But first, how about a conversation with a friend? Stories come into our lives in so many ways, from families passing them along, telling to telling, from the pages of great books, from radio and podcasts, through songs, and of course, through the things we see on screen. And exploring all of the ways that great stories get into our hearts and minds is part of what we love here on The Appleseed. I'm joined by a longtime member of our BYU radio family, and he's been heard behind the microphone talking about movies for hundreds of hours, shall we say. Cole Wissinger,
that's
great
probably
to have you
accurate.
With us.
Thank you, Sam.
Find Cole in front of a good movie. Well, if you're looking for Cole, he's going to be in front of a good movie.
That's
right?
That's where to find it.
Yeah, yeah. And we invited Cole to bring a movie to chat about today, and this is one that, frankly, is a favorite of mine, too, right? There's a classic moment in my family. So it actually comes from when I was dating my wife.
Aww.
And she recommended a movie, and I said, is it good? And she said, no, it's funny.
Well, and good, I would argue.
And there are some movies that my ideas about good are sometimes pretty subjective.
Yeah.
But boy, there are some movies that I can without a doubt say, boy, that's pretty funny. And this is one of those movies. We're talking about the classic,
The Emperor's New Groove.
The Emperor's New Groove.
A Disney movie classic.
So here. So the introduction of so many to the talents of Patrick Warburton, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it So this would be where a more talented radio personality would give you a good impression, but yeah. I don't got it.
That's all right.
But it's the deep voice, like he's the Tick. He's a couple. He's got just the voice, and he's Kronk.
And
in this
forever
one.
Kronk, right? Yeah, forever Kronk.
Standing alongside Eartha Kitt's Yzma,
yeah,
which is perfect as well. So this, I mean, I'm glad she described it as funny, because this is my go-to for the funniest movie that I think that I've ever seen. And I was a kid whenever it came out. I'm a product of the 90s, and so I grew up in the true Disney renaissance. Yeah. So Disney was synonymous with my childhood,
right,
from Little Mermaid through Tarzan. But that's kind of where, you know, your academics on the matters of Disney movie history and the Renaissance. Well, the very next year, they came out with my favorite Disney movie ever in 2000, The Emperor's New Groove.
And what was it that, I mean, certainly we've already talked about how funny it is, right? But what is it that you love about The Emperor's New Groove?
Well, it's the why that it's funny. And it's the first time I was introduced to the idea of breaking the fourth wall, right? Mm. Theatrically, I've never been in a production per se, but the concept is when you build a set, you build three walls, and then the camera is where that fourth wall would be, and that's us looking in on the production.
Or the audience, right? The audience is sitting there in the space where that fourth wall would be.
Well, when you break the fourth wall, that means you're turning to the camera, addressing the fact that this is movie, this is picture, and you're talking to your audience. And, you know, Shakespeare does it in the form of little soliloquies where they branch off, but Emperor's New Groove does it to funny effect.
And that was new for you in that movie.
Oh, sure. Yeah. I mean, I'd kind of grown up with your basics of cinema, or just, you know, old movies on Turner Classic Movies, or just your basic Disney. This one was something completely different, and I took to it.
And we talk about Patrick Warburton, right? But there are so many performances that are so fun in The Emperor's New Groove. Take Patrick Warburton out of the picture, and what do you love?
David Spade and John Goodman have the best on-screen chemistry of any of those Disney movies, for my money anyway. Again, a lot of them before that were focused on the romance and does he get the girl at the end, and I could have cared less when I was 8 years old, but the fact that there were these two buddies that started off just hating each other.
It's a buddy film,
for a
reason,
right? Like, and so many other movies try to capture, you know, they shouldn't like each other for this and this and this and this, but like, this movie does a good job, when I go back and look at it with a critical eye as an adult, of establishing, they were kind of enemies.
Yeah.
They grow to love each other during the course of peril, and they have a lasting relationship after the end credits.
Certainly gave rise to, you know, the straight-to-video release Kronk's New Groove as well, right?
I was so excited. That's one of the biggest disappointments, I think, of my childhood as well, because I knew all of those Disney sequels were bad, right? But I loved Emperor's New Groove so much that I was excited for Kronk's New Groove. Warburton, more, but it wasn't. And also, we should mention the fact that all those Disney movies at the time were getting television shows as well on the Disney Channel. The Emperor's New School would be the one associated with this one. Also kind of terrible, but the original movie, that's the one I love.
And one of the things I love about The Emperor's New Groove is that clearly everyone is having such a fun time, right? Not just the people behind the microphones who are doing the voice acting, but the people who are drawing the pictures, the people who are doing the editing, the people who are, everybody's having a great time.
There are probably more beautifully animated movies from this era, but there's no more imaginatively animated. Again, playing with the idea of the fourth wall, pulling down the map whenever they were on the big chase and saying, well, it doesn't really make sense. But
all the way
through it, the way it the tracking shot we got through, and then just the big scope of the setting of that Central American ambiguous place where he's the emperor of. And
everybody's having a great time, except, I guess I better qualify that by saying everybody's having a great time except Sting. Right? Sting, who wrote My Funny Friend and Me, the song that plays over the credits.
In the credits.
They've got a pop song after every, over the credits of every one of those.
Every single
songs,
one.
Right?
And it's a star of the age, and they just kind of stick it in there. But Sting, this is probably why it's one of the symbolize of the end of the Disney Renaissance, is because it's not a musical. It's just got the Sting song at the end.
That's right, yeah. Well, what a fun film. The Emperor's New Groove, bringing back a lot of memories here with Nicole Wissinger. These are such fun days because you can access your favorite movies or movies that you haven't seen in a while, movies that, you know, the answer to, gosh, I haven't seen that film in a long time, I wonder where I could find it, is probably, well, on the screen that's in front of me right now.
Go ahead and look.
So go ahead and look. We invite you to The Emperor's New Groove. Happy to talk to Cole Wissinger about a favorite film here on The Appleseed. Great stories come into our lives in so many ways. Such a pleasure to chat with our friend Cole Wissinger about The Emperor's New Groove. We'll have Cole back. And conversation with Cole may be reminding you of a movie that you love, a movie that brought a great story into your life, whether the story was contained in the movie or just triggered by it, right? Makes you think of the great experience that you had going to a movie with a friend or family member or loved one. A conversation like the conversation we just had with Cole can sometimes trigger those memories, and we hope that you share them with the people that you love. Share with us by sending us an email at theappleseed@byu.edu. We'd love to hear from you. And some of our favorite tales come from listeners just like you. Now, up next, we've got a story from Beatrice Bowles. She grew up on fairy tales. Maybe you did, too. She says they sustained her sense of wonder and the beauty of life. And, of course, the stories that she loved as a child, she later told to her kids and felt like she was planting magic seeds. She wanted to get that feeling more and more often, so she did. Thus was a storyteller born. And this story she has for us today is a retelling of one of the Grimm Brothers' stories, one of their collected stories. Mother Holly, it's called. And in this story, a family of three lives day to day tending to chores and a meager living. One daughter is lazy, the other daughter is industrious, and one day the hardworking daughter finds herself in a mystical land where she works for the woman in charge of the world's seasons. And for her hard work, she's rewarded with gold. Well, the lazy daughter has some grand plans after seeing how that story turns out for her sister. But laziness doesn't pay as well as hard work. There's a lot more in this story from Beatrice Bowles, Mother Holly on the Appleseed.
Mother Holly. Once upon a time, long ago, there was a widow who had two daughters. One was hard-working, the other was lazy. But the mother loved only the lazy one, for she was lazy too. So the hard-working girl had to do all the hardest work and be the Cinderella of the house. After doing all the other work, she'd sit by the well and spin till her fingers bled. One day, she dipped the shuttle in the well to wash off some blood, and the shuttle fell from her hand and sank to the bottom of the well. She ran home crying and told her mother, "Since you let it fall in, you must get it out again," said the mother. The girl went back to the well, and what should she do but jump in? Down, down, down she sank. And when she stopped and opened her eyes, there was a door. She opened it, and on the other side she found a meadow where the sun was shining. So along she went until she came to an oven that smelled of hot bread. The bread cried out, "Oh, help, help, please! Take us out or we shall burn!" So the girl stopped to take out the loaves one by one and left them to cool. She went on till she came to an apple tree which called out, "Oh, shake me, or my branches will break. My apples are ripe and heavy." So the girl stopped to shake the tree till apples fell like rain, gathered the apples into a heap, and went on. At last she came to a little house with a garden, where an old woman with great big teeth was working. The girl was very frightened. The old woman called out,
"Come in, dear. There's nothing to fear. work for me, and you shall be the better for it. Your job will be to shake my bed covers every day, and shake them well until the feathers fly. Then there is snow up on Earth, for I am Mother Holly, keeper of the seasons.
Mother Holly spoke so kindly that the girl agreed to stay and work for her. Each day she shook the bed covers so well that the feathers flew like snowflakes, and then there was snow up on Earth. The girl had a pleasant time at Mother Holly's house with never a cross word. After 3 months' time, though, the girl became lonely for her own world and told Mother Holly she would like to leave. Mother Holly said,
"You have served me well, and I am pleased. I myself shall see you out."
She took the girl by the hand and led her to the door at the edge of the meadow. The door opened, and as the girl walked through, a heavy shower of gold rained down and stuck all over her clothes and hair.
"You have that gold because you are so hard working," said Mother Holly.
Then she gave the girl back her shuttle. The door closed, and the girl floated up, up, up inside the well until she reached the top. And there she was, not far from her mother's house. As she approached home, the rooster crowed,
"Cock-a-doodle-doo, cock-a-doodle-doo, your golden girl's come back to you."
The mother and sister marveled at the sight of all the gold all over the girl and immediately asked how she'd come by it. When the girl told her story, the lazy sister said,
"Then I shall have some gold, too."
No spinning for her. She just grabbed the shuttle, pricked her hand till a drop of blood fell in the water, threw the shuttle down into the well, jumped in after it, and sank down, down, down to the bottom. She went through the door, came to the meadow, got to the oven where the bread cried out,
"Oh, help, help, take us out, or we shall burn."
The lazy sister said, "Why should I get hot and dirty for you?" and went on. Then she came to the apple tree and heard it cry,
"Oh, shake me, my apples are ripe and heavy."
The lazy girl said, "No, thank you. What if one of your apples fell on my head?" and went on. At last she came to Mother Holly's house, and she was not afraid because she'd already heard from her sister about the gray, big teeth. She agreed at once to work there. The first day, the lazy girl forced herself to work hard, thinking of the gold. She shook the bed covers till the feathers flew and there was snow up on Earth. Mother Holly was pleased. The second day, the lazy girl began to be lazy again. And the third day, she wouldn't even get up in the morning. Mother Holly was soon tired of this and told the girl she could leave. The lazy girl got up, all excited, thinking of the golden rain to come. Mother Holly led her to the door at the edge of the sunny meadow. But as she walked through, instead of gold, a kettle of sticky, smelly pitch emptied itself all over the lazy girl.
"That is your reward,"
said Mother Holly as the door closed. So the lazy girl went home covered in pitch. The rooster cried,
"Cock-a-doodle-doo, cock-a-doodle-doo, your pitchy girl's come home to you."
The dreadful pitch stuck fast to the lazy girl and smelled terrible and could not be got off for a long, long time, no matter what anyone tried.
Beatrice Bowles with a story called Mother Holly, one of the stories collected by the Brothers Grimm. And that's from a collection called Heaven's a Garden in the Heart. And there's a lot coming up. We're going to hear from Michael Katz, and after that, we'll hear a little tune from Mustard's Retreat. You won't want to miss any of it. I'm Sam Payne.
You're listening to The Appleseed. We'll be back in a moment.
Welcome back to The Appleseed. Here's Sam Payne.
It's so great to have you with us on today's episode of The Appleseed in this hour. We've enjoyed a Brothers Grimm story told for you by Beatrice Bowles, a story called Mother Holly. And at the top of the hour, you heard a story from Bobby Norfolk. Bobby Norfolk, who has been described as an adventure story come to life. We've got a couple of more tales for you. This one from Michael Katz. It's called Ishiutsu. It's from a collection of stories called Far Away and Close to Home, Magical and Mystical Tales from Around the World. Well, in this story, there's a poor brother and a rich brother, and despite his poverty, the poor brother is generous in giving, while the rich brother is selfish and won't share with anyone. Well, the poor brother comes across some good fortune one day, and that's where we're going to leave you with this story from Michael Katz. Happy to bring it to you on The Appleseed.
Long ago, in Japan, there lived two brothers. The oldest brother was named Taro, which means first brother. He had lots of money, but he never shared it with anyone. People would say about Taro, "Oh, yokubari," which means, "Oh, greedy." On the other side of the mountain lived the youngest brother. His name was Hiroshi, which can mean generous. Even though he did not have a lot of money, Hiroshi would share whatever he had with everyone. Now, it was almost the new year, and in Japan, many people celebrate with delicious rice cakes called mochi. The tradition is to put these mochi around the house as an offering to ask for good luck in the new year. Well, the poor brother Hiroshi had no mochi, and no money to buy mochi with. He said to himself, "I know, I'll go visit my rich brother Taro. Maybe he'll give me some mochi, or lend me some money so I can buy some mochi." So, Hiroshi climbed up the mountain between their two homes, climbed down the other side. And when he arrived at Taro's house, he knocked on his door. Taro opened the door. But just a bit, because he didn't trust anybody.
"What do you want?"
"Hello, brother. I was wondering if I could have some mochi for the new year, or maybe I could borrow some money to buy some mochi."
"Oh. Once again, you have no money. This will teach you not to give away things to other people."
And Taro slammed the door in Hiroshi's face. "Oh, well, I guess I won't have any mochi for the new year."
So, Hiroshi turned around and set off for his home. When he got to the top of the mountain between the two homes, he saw an old man, an oji-san, sitting underneath a tree.
"Konnichiwa, oji-san. Have a good year, old man."
The old man looked at Hiroshi and said,
"And a wonderful year for you."
Hiroshi kept walking when suddenly the old man called out to him,
"Mate, mate, mate! Come here! Come here, come here, come here, come here, come here! I have something for you. Here."
And from out of the old man's bag, he pulled out a rice cake, a mochi, and gave it to Hiroshi. "Oh, thank you, old man. This is exactly what I wanted. A good year to you, old man. A good year to you." Once again, Hiroshi began to walk home, and once again the old man called out to him,
Mate, mate! Come here, come here, come here, come here, come here. Don't go home just yet. Look over there. Do you see that little hole in the ground? You'll see these little people climbing out of the hole. They're called Kobito. Kobito love mochi. Give them your mochi, but only if they give you their millstone, their ishiusu.
Now, a millstone, an ishiusu, is made up of two large round stones that turn on each other and grind up grain like rice into flour for baking things like mochi. Hiroshi walked over to the hole in the ground, and sure enough, there were little people climbing out of the hole about the size of your thumb. They all smelled the mochi.
Mochi, 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 mochi.
Hello there, Kobito. I'll give you the mochi if you give me your millstone, your ishiusu.
No, 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 no.
All right, then. Bye.
No, no, come back, come back, come back, come back, come back, come back, come back.
Hiroshi went back to the hole, gave the Kobito the mochi, and they gave him their millstone, their ishiusu. Well, since Kobito are so small, the millstone fit in the palm of Hiroshi's hand. Hiroshi walked back to the old man and said, I got the millstone. It's very cute. Thank you very much, Oji-san. Now, before Hiroshi could walk away, once again the old man cried out,
Mate, mate! Come here! Come here, come here, come here. That millstone is a magic millstone. Anything you want, ask for it and turn the millstone to the right. And it will come out of the millstone. When you have enough of that thing, turn the millstone to the left. And it will stop. Have a wonderful year!
And you too, Oji-san. And Hiroshi climbed down the mountain to his home. When he got back to his home, Hiroshi thought to himself, let's see if this magic millstone works. Ishiusu, I'd like some mochi, please. And he turned the millstone to the right. Mochi started flying out of the millstone. When he had enough, he turned the millstone to the left, and it stopped. It was magic. Well, Hiroshi, he always thought about other people first and sharing his wealth. I know. I'll have a party at my house to celebrate the new year. I'll invite everyone. Let's see. What do I need for the party? Everyone loves rice, gohan. Millstone, ishiusu, some rice, please. And he turned the millstone to the right. Rice started flying out of the millstone. And when he had enough rice, he turned the millstone to the left. Oh, in Japan, we love to eat fish, sakana. Some fish, please. And he turned the millstone to the right. Fish started flopping out of the millstone. Sushi grade. And when he had enough, he turned the millstone to the left. Well, in Japan, they make many things out of rice, including a rice drink called sake. I'd like some sake, please. And he turned the millstone to the right. Sake started flowing out of the millstone. He put bottles on the ground, and the sake flowed right into them. And when the bottles were full, Hiroshi turned the millstone to the left. Oh, he invited everyone to his party, including his rich brother, Taro. While he was at the party, Taro thought to himself, how did my brother get all these nice things, all this nice food? Just today he was over at my house begging me. I'm gonna find out. That whole night at the party, Taro followed Hiroshi everywhere he went, hoping to find out how his poor brother got all of this food. He couldn't figure it out. Just then, someone at the party yelled out,
Hiroshi! More mochi, please.
Yes, more mochi.
All right, everyone. I'll be right back with some more mochi. And Hiroshi walked into his room where he had the millstone. His rich brother, Taro, snuck right behind him and peeked into Hiroshi's room. he saw Hiroshi standing over his millstone, whispering, "Ishiusu, I'd like some more mochi, please." And Taro saw Hiroshi turn the millstone to the right. Mochi started flying out of the millstone. When Taro saw this, he said to himself, "Aha! That's where Hiroshi's getting everything from. A magic Ishiusu. I know. I'm going to come back here tonight and steal that millstone, and then I'll be the richest man on Earth." Now that Taro had his evil plan, he turned and left the party, grabbing some fish on his way out the door. When Hiroshi had enough mochi, he said to the millstone, "That's enough," and he turned the millstone to the left. Hiroshi went back into the living room where the party was, and he noticed that his brother Taro was gone. Oh well. Hiroshi served the mochi to everybody. Oh, it was such a great party, and it went late into the night. And after everyone had left, Hiroshi was so tired, he fell fast asleep in his bed, his futon. Later that night, Taro came back to his brother's house to steal the millstone. Quietly, he opened the door and crept into his brother's room. There was Hiroshi, fast asleep. He crept by his sleeping brother. Ah! There was the millstone. Taro grabbed the millstone. Aha! Ooh. Now I'll be the richest man on Earth. He snuck by his sleeping brother and went out the door. Taro ran down to the ocean where he had a boat. You see, Japan is made up of many islands, and Taro didn't want to be caught stealing the millstone. So he decided he'd paddle a boat to another island of Japan, and there he'd be the richest man on Earth. And no one would ever catch him. Taro jumped into the boat and began to paddle out to sea. He paddled for a long time. And when he was far enough from land, he stopped paddling and yelled out, "Ha! Now I'm the richest man on Earth! I think I'll stop and have something to eat. How about some fish from my brother's party? Oh! But I forgot to bring some salt with me. No problem. I have the magic millstone. Ishiusu, I'd like some shio, some salt. Give me some salt." And Taro turned the millstone to the right. Salt started flowing out of the millstone. When Taro had enough, he said, "Okay, you can stop now. You can stop. That's enough. No more salt. No more shio. Stop. No more salt. I don't need it. Stop. Stop. Tomare. 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 Please. Stop." Soon there was a mound of salt in the boat, then a hill of salt, then a mountain of salt. So much salt that the boat became so heavy, it broke into two pieces. And the salt, and the millstone, and the rich brother sank to the bottom of the sea. Taro hadn't stayed long enough in his brother's room to find out about turning the millstone to the left to stop it. Now in Japan, they say that the boat, the rich brother, and the millstone have never been found. But they say that millstone is still making salt today. That's why the ocean is so salty.
Michael Katz with a story about brothers with very different stances on how to live life. Shall we wrap up with a little tune? This is a tune from Mustard's Retreat. The Michigan Times said that if you want to know what kind of music Mustard's Retreat plays, they play music to cure what ails you. This is a song called Sweet Dreams. You know, if we look, fairy tales, some of them are darker than we might think, and many are meant even to scare children into obedience. We've sometimes softened them over the years, but it can be interesting to reflect on just how dark some of them could be and how we use them to start off a night of sleep sometimes. Here's Mustard's Retreat with Sweet Dreams here on the Appleseed.
I started out writing this song for my brand new granddaughter, Ellie, and it quickly changed. But, Ellie, this is for you, honey.
Tonight, a brand new story of wild things gnashing teeth in a kingdom, in a bedroom where little children sleep, of a boy whose bad behavior left him to a hungry fate, where the wild things hide and lie in wait. Then it's good night, sleep tight, don't you let the bed bugs bite. Sweet dreams, my love, I'll see. Mr. Grimm has something special for us to read tonight, about a girl who cut her toes and heels off with a carving knife, crammed her stump into a slipper made of crystal so divine, all to fool Prince Charming and become his valentine. Then it's...
You can laugh.
Then it's good night, sleep tight. Don't you let the bed bugs bite. Sweet dreams, my love, I'll see you in the morning. There are ogres under bridges, selling witches, so many stories we can read. Then we'll stop the oration, leave you to imagination, and it's lights out, my sweet. It's time for sleep. La la la. Blood, who were swiped from busy mothers who had little time for love. Then a tale about a flute that was carved from human bones, and how it sings a tale of murder in lovely dulcet tones. Then it's good night, sleep tight, don't you let the bed bugs bite. Sweet dreams, my love, I'll see you in the morning.
You want to sing that with me? Let's try it together here.
Don't you let the bed bugs
down to sleep. I pray the Lord my soul to keep. If I should die before I wake, I pray the Lord my soul to take.
Mustard's Retreat with Sweet Dreams. That wraps us up for today. We've heard from Michael Katz and Beatrice Bowles with that story, Mother Holly. We talked about The Emperor's New Groove with Cole Wissinger, and we heard from that adventure story, Come to Life, Bobby Norfolk, with Baby Hawk Learns to Fly. This hour was written by Trent Horton. Our audio engineer is Carly Robison. Our producer is Jeff Simpson. I'm Sam Payne. What a pleasure to have you with us. I can't wait to be with you again on The Appleseed.
Thanks for joining us for an hour of stories, music, and conversation made for you and your family and brought to you by The Appleseed. The show is a production of BYU Radio. We'll see you next time.
Hi, it's Sam again. Thanks so much for joining us for today's stories on The Appleseed. There will be more next time. We've been bringing tall tales, fairy tales, folk tales, personal tales, historical tales, and more to the air since 2013. We hope to be doing it for many, many years to come. And if you like The Appleseed, you may enjoy The Lisa Show or Top of Mind or Constant Wonder, all shows produced by BYU Radio that you can find at byuradio.org or by Googling the titles of any of those shows. I'm Sam Payne. We'll see you next time.